I'm happy today because yesterday I was able to sell a car that I had been trying to sell for over a month now. We have a little Chevy Malibu, and it was always giving us trouble ever since we bought it. I took a risk. I bought it for $2,500. It was actually, you know, if it was in good running condition, it'd be worth about $5,000. And I took a risk, and it wasn't really worth it for me. But it was for my daughter, Greta. And so she loved this car. It was a pain in the patootie for me. But she loved it. She loved it so much she named it Riker. She named her car Riker because she's it's a nice-looking car. It's got tinted windows and nice chrome hubcaps. But it finally came to the end when it just broke down on her on the way out on the highway one day. And the mechanics, they were looking at it, and they're pulling out the solenoids on it, and they found metal shavings in the oil, which is a sign that there's a problem deep inside, and it's metal rubbing on metal, and it just couldn't be fixed. And we just needed to replace the engine. The entire engine needs to be replaced. I'm like, I'm not doing that. That's too much trouble for me. I'm tired of this thing, so we're selling it. And Greta was actually a little upset. She was a little upset. She loved this car. She's like, no, we can't sell Riker. That's my car. I love Riker. And I had to explain it all to her. And well, still, why don't we just put a new engine in it? I was like, oh, that's a lot of work and a lot of money, and it's just not worth it. And she was still kind of upset about it. And she was kind of fighting for it to try to keep it. And so we put it on the market for sale, and about 3-4 weeks later, it still hadn't sold because, you know, I'm trying to get as much out of it as I can. So I've got it priced fairly high. And it still hadn't sold. She says, well, see, Dad, now we've got to just put our own engine in it. We can do it. And she was just really fighting to keep this car. Finally, I dropped the price and had a bunch of people interested, and I sold it yesterday. And so I'm so relieved to get rid of it. But she's still in agony. You know, like she misses her car. She hasn't had it for a month and a half now. And it's going to be another month and a half before we can save up to get her, you know, a good one that's not going to be as problematic. But she's holding on to this. She doesn't want to let it go. Is there anything in your life? Has there been a car that you just loved that you did not want to let go? Or was there, maybe it was a house. You loved that house. It was your dream house. And you had to leave it. You had to move somewhere. And it's just not the same. Or is there some toy? You know, toys aren't just for little kids, right? You know, grown-ups have toys too. Maybe it was a favorite snowmobile or an ATV or maybe a boat, and you came to the end and you just realized, this is just too much work. It's not worth it. I got to let it go. And it was just painful, right? We get attached to our things, don't we? We get attached to them. And when you're a little kid, it's your favorite toy. And when one other little kid tries to take your toy, you like bonk them with it. You're not taking this toy from me. I'm keeping this. Some people react. Some people react strongly when their things are being taken. Okay? Like, for instance, this guy whose truck is being repossessed by the bank because he couldn't make his payments. Take a look at what he did.
Hey, repo man, no way you're taking my truck. The driver guns the gas as he does his best to take off. But the wheels just go round and round. Then this happened.
That was a first. I had never seen one of my trucks go up in the air that way.
Now look, the pickup truck flies off the tow truck. That didn't go as expected. Oh! Oh!
He was fighting. He's like, you're not taking my truck. That's mine, right? That's kind of a natural reaction that we have with our things, though, isn't it? And we get, when someone's going to take this thing that I like, I mean, especially if you get a nice new truck like that, you're excited about it, you're happy about it, you're feeling proud. No one's going to take my truck from me, and then you fight for it, right? Our emotions are stirred up. They're actually triggered. And so as we are talking about this through this series called Triggered, we are exploring the different emotions that are stirred up. And Jesus is giving us various commands to guide us as we are tempted to react against people, to retaliate, to express anger, to fight for and defend. And in this passage that we're going to look at, Jesus says this: if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. Okay, now, you've probably heard this phrase. In fact, we sometimes use this as someone who's really generous. They give you the shirt off their back, right? Okay, so we've heard that phrase for us. It's a quality of generosity and humility and willingness to help others. Okay, it comes from this command that Jesus gives. But it started with Exodus. And when Jesus was teaching his disciples and his followers about this command, they're thinking of this law in Exodus, which says, if you lend money to one of my people among you who is needy, do not treat it like a business deal. Charge no interest. Well, there's something to think about right there. But then it goes on and says, if you take your neighbor's cloak as a pledge, okay, let's say this is their way of saying, I'm good for the money, I'll pledge you my cloak, my coat. The law says, return it by sunset, because that cloak is the only covering your neighbor has. What else can they sleep in? Now, this cloak, people's clothing in biblical times basically had two major parts to it. There was the outer coat that kept you warm, and the inner tunic, or what Jesus is referring to as the shirt, the inner tunic. And a way to understand the inner tunic is that's basically your underwear, okay? That's what they wore. That was close to their skin. It was the first item of clothing next to their skin. The cloak or the coat was the item that they would wear on the outside to keep warm. But also, if you didn't have a home to sleep in, if you were traveling, if you were homeless or poor, or if you were just out and going on a journey, the coat served as your bedding at night. And it would be thick. It would be comfortable. It would keep you warm at night. And so this law was in recognition of people who are out in the element, they need that cloak, that coat. So don't take it away from them. If they offer it to you as a collateral for this loan that they're asking for you, then just make sure that you give it back to them at night so that they can sleep in it. Then also in another passage in Deuteronomy, where this passage here helps us to see a little bit more insight into it. Okay, so in verse 10 it says, when you make a loan of any kind to your neighbor, don't go into their house to get what is offered to you as pledge. And, you know, have enough honor and respect for the person that you don't go barging in to take their stuff. Verse 11, stay outside and let the neighbor to whom you are making the loan bring the pledge out to you. If the neighbor is poor, do not go to sleep with their pledge or their coat in your possession. Return their cloak by sunset so that your neighbor may sleep in it. Then they will thank you. You see, this is an act of generosity, and it will be regarded to you as a righteous act in the sight of the Lord your God. If you show mercy to the person who is asking for help and they're willing to give you the cloak, you need to show mercy to them and say, yeah, you can have it back. I recognize you need to stay warm, so you can have it back when you sleep, but then bring it back to me in the morning. That's a generous thing. That's a kind thing. But growing up with that law, these people who are hearing Jesus teach now, they know this law. And they know it is their right given to them by the law to have their cloak back. And it basically, as time went on, like, what's the point of even taking the cloak in the first place then? If I can't just keep it, you might as well just keep it. Right? So it just came this kind of unwritten sense that you don't take someone's cloak. You don't take their coat because it's protected by the law. It's their right to have their coat. But now Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 through 42, he says, you have heard that it was said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. We've already talked about this a couple weeks ago. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. That was about if someone insults you, you turn the other cheek. And then he says, if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. Don't demand your right. Give them your coat as well. Now, this is kind of hard to really sort through this. Now, what we see here in this passage is that Jesus gives a primary command here, a primary teaching. Do not resist an evil person. That's the command. But then he lists a bunch of examples here. The first example is, of course, turn the other cheek. Let's look at that screen here. Turn the other cheek is the first example. Second example is hand over your coat. Third example is go the extra mile. Fourth example is give to the one who asks. And then fifth, don't say no to the one who wants to borrow. So he's giving examples of how to live out this command. Don't fight or oppose the person who is wicked, the person who is evil, the person who is attacking you or insulting you or taking your stuff. Don't fight it. You're different. As people of God, you're different. So hand over your coat. This is his command. Hand over your coat. Are we willing to hand over our coats? Are we willing to give up what is rightfully ours for the sake of the kingdom? Now, it's interesting that this passage, that this teaching that Jesus gives in Matthew chapter 5, verse 40, is also mirrored in Luke chapter 6. Let's look at that verse now. In Luke chapter 6, Luke's version shows that Jesus says, if someone takes your coat, don't withhold your shirt from them. Matthew's version says, if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. They're reversed. So for some reason, and I'm not entirely sure why, for some reason, Matthew or Luke's version really has the sense of being robbed. You're being robbed. Because if someone takes your coat, it's likely because, obviously, the law, they can't, it's your right to keep your coat. So someone's robbing you, and it's the first thing they can grab. They can rip it off of you. They can beat you up and take your coat. Okay, so that's robbery. But Matthew's version, he says, if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. Now, your shirt isn't protected, your tunic isn't protected by law in the Old Testament. Your shirt is the only thing that they can really take from you. And notice that Matthew's version says, wants to sue you. That means that you owe that person money and you haven't paid it back. So now they're coming after you to get what's rightfully theirs. And if you don't have the cash to give them, they're going to take your shirt. They're suing you for your shirt. In both senses, in both versions, Jesus is saying, be willing to give everything. Be willing, if you're being robbed, show extreme generosity and also give your shirt. If you're being sued, show the generosity and humility to acknowledge, yeah, I didn't pay you back. You can take my shirt and here, I'm so sorry. You can have my coat too. But let's think about the feelings that come up when we're in that kind of a situation. Now, we've been talking about these different emotions, happy, sad, mad. We tend to think in these just real simplistic terms. But there's a lot of emotions. There are a lot of different emotions behind this sense of being mad if someone's taking my stuff. Some of these emotions, one might be, you're just embarrassed. Maybe it's insecure. Maybe you feel ashamed. You're embarrassed that you couldn't pay back your debt. And now your truck is being repossessed. You feel ashamed. And instead of just acknowledging that embarrassment, acknowledging that you couldn't pay it back, apologizing, owning up to your own mistake, you start fighting for it. And you let anger come out, and you start fighting for your own dignity. You're not going to take my truck. I'm going to take this off the tow truck. I'm going to take it back. And you see that scene that played out there. But Jesus is saying, no. Like, part of this is, if you owe money, you got to pay it back. Right? You have to be humble enough to admit that you got yourself into a situation here that you couldn't get out of. So first of all, lead with this humility and just admit it, own it. And second, you don't need to fight back. You don't need to retaliate with anger because you don't need that. Now, these feelings that we have, if we go back to the lawsuit here, we are reminded that we are responsible to pay back those whom we owe. So for some people, you should never have gotten into this situation in the first place. But if you do find yourself in that situation, Jesus is calling us to take responsibility and own up to our own situation. But second, perhaps you find yourself in a situation where you owe someone something and you can't help it. You're stuck. Life is happening to you in a way that you have no control over. And that's hard. You're genuinely stuck between a rock and a hard place. You can't figure out how to pay back your debt. You've lost your job because of medical problems, and now you can't pay for your house mortgage. Or perhaps you can't pay for that car, or whatever it is, and you're just stuck. But Jesus is even calling us, even then, be willing to subject yourself to the embarrassment and the loss of dignity to show a higher character, to show and demonstrate that your security is not found in your house. Your security, your identity is not found in your car. It is not found in your things. Your security is found in the Lord, and you trust in Him. See, if you were to do that, and that person is still taking advantage of you, they still take your coat and let you be naked in front of everybody else, they still take your vehicle, they still take, then what you see is, well, the shame is on them, right? Because there's lack of mercy. There's lack of compassion for someone in need. But let the Lord vindicate that person. Now, there's two thoughts that I have coming out of this. The first one has to do with generosity. And it's the sense that really God is calling us to recognize that generosity should always be given, but never expected. If I owe someone something and I can't pay them back, I should not expect them to eat the expense of my mistake or my situation, whether it was my fault or not my fault. I should not expect them to be generous to me, but I should always be generous to them. If I owe them my shirt, I should give them also. Here, I'm so sorry for the inconvenience. Take my coat as well. Generosity should always be given by the people of God to others around us, but never expected. The second thought I have is this. It has to do with our dignity. We tend to fight and defend our dignity because we're afraid of being embarrassed and ashamed, right? Well, our fight as the people of God is for the dignity of others, not our own. Jesus is calling us to not fight for our own dignity, but to fight for others. If someone else is experiencing an injustice, then we step in and we advocate for generosity. We advocate for mercy. We advocate for compassion. But when it comes to ourselves, we're called to not fight for our own dignity, but to trust in the Lord to be our defender, to go to battle for us. And so how do we do this? How do we manage these feelings that get triggered and this urge to fight for it, to fight back, to be like the guy who's trying to get his truck back from the tow? Well, we've talked about these three steps. Let's walk through them together. First of all, you got to learn how to catch the emotion. Now, one thing that we were talking about this week was with my wife and I, we were talking about how helpful it is to recognize a phrase that you might be saying to yourself. Okay, so for instance, maybe someone does something and you feel yourself getting upset or frustrated or mad about that. But how do you catch it? Well, you might hear yourself in your own mind saying, "Are you serious? I mean, do you ever say something like that? Are you kidding me? Did you really just do that?" You kind of say that. You may not say it out loud. Maybe you do. But do you catch yourself saying that? Use that as your catchphrase. When you hear yourself saying that, that's a clue. I'm being triggered. Or you might, in this situation, you might hear yourself saying, "That's mine. That's mine." When you hear yourself saying that, that's a clue that you're being triggered. And that's how you catch it. And you step away, you pause before you react, and you think about it. The next step, then, is to name it. You catch it first, and then you name it. Now, we've talked about how anger is just a catchphrase for a lot of different emotions that we might be feeling. And it's important for us to actually name the real emotion that's happening. Now, I might be upset about someone taking my things, but maybe I'm just really disappointed. Maybe I'm just really disappointed that I couldn't follow through with my commitment. I'm disappointed in myself. I'm disappointed in the loss of this dream. I loved the idea of having this truck and the ability to haul things, but now I'm losing it. Or maybe you're embarrassed. It's embarrassment that is causing such a rise of anger in you. You're embarrassed that you weren't able to follow through. It could be this emotion is actually really jealousy. You're jealous of your neighbors who are able to have this thing, and now you can't. Or maybe you're just afraid of being uncomfortable. I mean, imagine having your coat, the thing that keeps you warm at night, the thing that you sleep on, imagine that, having to give that up. How uncomfortable you would be. How uncomfortable is this? Is there something in your life that like you feel like I could never live without this because it makes me feel comfortable? It's this fear of discomfort. All this is wrapped up in this little nugget of a teaching that Jesus is giving us. So then once you name it, you're able to deal with it and train it, which is the third step. Now it's time to train that emotion. And you do that by asking questions. Ask a question like, "Does my happiness really depend on having this thing? This house, this car, this item of clothing, this tool." Oh my goodness, I love my tools. It's really hard for me to loan out my tools to someone. Because I want to make sure I get it back. Because they might forget to give it back to me, right? Or they might break it. Well, that's just this natural urge to protect my things. But if I train myself, does my happiness really depend on the ability to keep my tools? No, I can get another one. I can get a lesser one if I need to. Does my security really come from my possessions? Once you've asked those questions of yourself and you've dug down into what's really going on, your next step, your final step, is to replace lies with truth, right? You think about, what lie am I believing about myself or about this thing that causes me to try to protect it so hard? And you replace it with the truth. My joy is not dependent on this possession. My joy does not depend on the circumstances in which I'm living. My security is not found in my comfort. My security is found in God's grace, in God's provision. My wife and I have, over the years, realized that we've tried to wrestle with this concept, but we are not defined by the things that we think are ours, but by the God who knows that we are His. I'm not defined by the things around me, the things that I have that I think are mine. I'm really defined by God, who knows that I belong to Him. And so we wrestle with this concept, and we think about our stuff. For example, our house. If we had to give up our house because life just wasn't working out, it's just a house. Now, could you say that? I mean, it's hard for me to say that, but could you say that? It's just a house. You can get another one. You can get a cheaper one. You can just rent if you need to. And there might be embarrassment. There might be a loss of sense of dignity, a sense of status that's lost. But if we're fighting to maintain our sense of dignity and status, then we're losing sight of what God's intentions are for us. So friends, don't let yourself be defined by your things. Let yourself be defined by God. Find your hope and security in Him.